Good morning, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of the last meeting before us from February 2nd, I believe it is. Is there any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Anyone want to make a motion? Representative McNamara moves that the minutes of the last meeting be approved. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, before we get into the details of presenting House File 264, at which point I'll go up to the witness stand and let Representative Albright take over, I did want to ask a few questions of the Department of Health, and that was one of the reasons that we had delayed the meeting today. And I guess they relate specifically to how the department funded the $891,000, or at least a portion of the $891,000 deficiency that they're asking for now. And there's a chart that I think people have in their packets that we actually got from the Minnesota Department of Health that I'm going to be referring to here. And I guess if I could have Commissioner Ellinger, or else I guess if he's got someone else from the department that he wants to send up, I guess I just wanted to ask some questions and understand a little bit more about the mechanics of how the money was spent on Ebola. And in saying this, I do want to say, members, I guess from my standpoint, this money for Ebola, I mean, a shortfall for something like Ebola that we're looking at a deficiency for is the sort of thing that should be in a deficiency bill. I don't think anyone could have reasonably foreseen that we would have an emergency like this coming up. Certainly, one couldn't expect that we'd be allocating money for Ebola preparedness a year ago, and I haven't heard of anyone who has found any fault with the department on the response that they did make to this situation. And in fact, everyone I've talked to has been very complimentary, and I want to compliment Commissioner Ellinger on the work that the department did in taking care of the state of Minnesota and making sure that if we were afflicted with this disease, that we were as prepared as we possibly could. But Dr. Ellinger, welcome to the committee. I guess as I look through this information that we got from the department, I see various federal grants on the left-hand side. I see a summary they've gotten of the purpose of the grant. And then in the third column, I see various amounts spent on Ebola. And yet, when I look through these, I see things like if I go to the second page, for example, the first grant at the bottom of the second funding, at the second column, it says any new activity in the grant must be approved and funded at the time the grant is awarded. There is no activity in this grant that allows for the development and maintenance of Ebola testing 24/7. And those are the department's words. And then in the third column, I see that we department apparently spent $163,540 of this grant on Ebola. And if I look at the next column down, the second column, the EIP grant, the final sentence in the second column from the department says, there is not a section in this grant that allows for development of new testing in response to an infectious disease such as Ebola, not in the grant. And then I look at, you know, the third column next to it, and I see that we apparently spent $191,000 on that. And if I go to the third page, I see a HIV prevention grant that solely deals with HIV, and yet I see we spent $25,893 on Ebola in that grant. And I guess, Dr. Ellinger, I appreciate the work that you did, and I appreciate the work the department did, but I guess from our standpoint on the Ways and Means Committee, as we think about how money moves around, can you talk about sort of what happened in the department and why apparently money from these federal grants that seem to be for things other than Ebola was spent on Ebola?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of Health. Thank you for that question. When the Ebola crisis came to Minnesota, we recognized that this was a threat to the health of the public. And so my, as health commissioner, my job is to respond to protect the health and safety of the Minnesotans. That's my top priority. And in, to do that, I had to look at who could best respond to those this crisis. So the people in the parts of the lab and parts of our infectious disease program that had the expertise to deal with Ebola were then mobilized to address this. They came from various parts that were funded by other federal programs because we don't have any funding specifically for Ebola in any of our budget. So that's why the process we're going through now is asking for deficiency funding because it was not budgeted for. We responded with the people with the expertise from these various programs that were funded by other federal grants. That's why we're requesting funding so that we can meet the criteria of those grants so that we don't default on those grants.
Well, Dr. Ellinger, is there anything in these grants or any sort of blanket federal law somewhere, provision that allows a person in a situation like this to take money from these grants and use it for in an emergency purpose like Ebola?
Mr. Chair, for me, I believe we had to respond. Not responding would have been irresponsible. And to respond, we should respond with the most effective and efficient and best qualified staff. And they came from these grants. That's why we are asking for the deficiency so that we can, do in a time of emergency, which I really believe that this was a crisis that really threatened the health of people in our state, that we had to respond. Not responding would have been irresponsible. And we moved dollars, people from those grants that were funded by those grants, to do this response. We are now asking for funding to repay those grants to do the work that really needed to be done, that still needs to be done.
And so, Dr. Ellinger, I guess if this committee and eventually the legislature gives the department the $891,000 that you're requesting, will that money then be, well, the portion of it that is spelled out here on this page, will it be reimbursed to these federal grants? So, I mean, if I look at the first page, the PHEP grant says amount spent on Ebola, $60,338. Will that grant be paid $60,338 of the $891,000 and so forth?
Mr. Chair, what we will do is the amount, the $60,000, the work that was postponed by that amount will be done with the dollars that we're receiving so that we will then make good on our requirements for that grant.
Okay, and so, Dr. Ellinger, I guess, I mean, the department gets some tens of millions of dollars a year in general fund monies. I mean, why didn't the department just take, the money that you're going to be spending on salaries and rent and stuff like that in June 2015 and use that money for this purpose instead of taking the money from these federal grants?
And Mr. Chair, as I mentioned, to respond, we had to respond with individuals who had the expertise to do this work. We could not expect people without this epidemiological expertise, without the infectious disease expertise, to do this kind of work. So we took the people from the places that had with the expertise, and that they are people who are funded by these federal dollars.
Okay, so I guess what I'm just trying to understand, so what you're saying, for example, the epidemiologist, you're saying you maybe don't have any other epidemiologists in the Department of Health other than perhaps the one that was working on this grant, and you needed that person, and so you took them off that grant and put them to work on Ebola. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chair, that is, it is correct in that we do have other epidemiologists and other, but they're not infectious disease epidemiologists. They may be chronic disease epidemiologists. So the people with the expertise to be able to respond effectively to this crisis were people in the infectious disease unit, and most of them were funded by federal grants.
Dr. Ellinger, did you ever look at just paying the infectious disease epidemiologist out of your general fund monies instead of the federal grants?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe our general fund dollars are targeted to specific activities, and they various requirements for those dollars. I don't believe that would have been an appropriate thing for me to do when the expertise that we needed was there, and with the expectation that we would come when we figured out what this was costing us for a deficiency request. That's why we're here, and that's why this deficiency request is being made.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this line of questioning, because I think it is sort of important to understand this. As I think you might have gotten to where I sort of wanted to go, I wanted to check out my understanding of what the commissioner is explaining to us here, that the chart is a little bit misleading when it says, you know, amount spent on Ebola. It looks like, oh, I've got a pot of money, I'm taking out some dollars for Ebola, and that's not really the way it's working, if I'm understanding this correctly. So the Department of Health has people who do this kinds of very specialized work, and they have amazing expertise. And so when you have a public health emergency like this, it's really the people who are the resources that can be called upon to do something extraordinary. And if I'm understanding this, Commissioner, those people are there working under these grants. Because, in fact, most of what the Department of Health does, it's kind of different than other agencies, most of what the department does is funded by federal grants. Right, Commissioner? So, you know, that's where the money is, if you will, in the Department of Health. So borrowing the time of these people from these other activities is what is needing to be paid back, rather than having, you know, taken money from different pots. It's really taking the people from their regular activities and now needing to make sure that we have the funding to make them complete what they had promised the feds they were going to be doing. Is that more or less it, Commissioner?
Dr. Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that is correct. For example, in the infectious disease laboratory, we have people who are doing laboratory work. They're not funded to do Ebola laboratory work. When it came about, they had to do some of that laboratory work for Ebola. So they were doing the things that they had the expertise to do, and that's where the resources came in. Now, through this, we are people who are doing, with the expertise, doing work that's related to this, but then specifically focused on Ebola when that crisis occurred. So there was not shifting of dollars and funding a new person to do something that they hadn't been. It was having them focus their special expertise on Ebola.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Ellinger. I think Representative Liebling correctly points out that the department receives a great deal of its funding through federal grants that are heavily dictated towards individual programs and individuals, and understand that you were put in a position where you had to move resources to react to an emergency, and had very little choice and would have been criticized had you not done so. Rightfully so, I would imagine. Just in dealing with the specific contract between the Department of Health and the feds on those monies, have you reviewed that, and do you know of any duty to notify when resources are being redeployed from what they're supposed to be doing, what they're being paid to do, to something else?
Commissioner Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, the grants come from a variety of, most of them are coming from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and they come from various components of that. There are different requirements, we've got specifically some of our grants that specifically told us that we could not use any of those dollars for anything else other than what they were granted for. We also have a process where at the end of March we communicate with our grantors to see whether or not we're going to be able to complete the requirements of the grant. That's where the timeline or the urgency of this request comes in. That's where we will be doing the communication with our federal partners about whether or not we can do the grant. There was no conversation at the beginning of this whether or not we could use these dollars differently. I made the decision that we really needed to respond. That would be the first response, and then we would kind of figure out afterwards how we could make good on our grants.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Ellinger, had you had any discussions with the governor's office on availability of funds from other resources that might be immediately available outside of using the resources that were presently at hand? In other words, could you have utilized monies that were available to the governor to quickly react to this? And we have additional resources available this year through an improved financial position for the state that the governor has chosen to spend more money in other areas without that. Did you have conversations with the governor or with liaisons from the governor's office about accessing additional dollars for the purpose of Ebola?
Commissioner Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, remember this is 25th. This is in our 2015 fiscal year, so there were no other resources that we knew were available. We did not have a conversation about other funding sources. My conversation with the governor was how best to respond to this crisis, and we did whatever we could to respond in the most effective way. I wasn't aware. We did not have any conversations about how it was going to be funded. Our conversations was how should we respond and how can we respond in the most effective way. And certainly the governor and certainly many members of the legislature were engaged in those conversations, tried to keep them informed about what we were doing, how we were doing it, so that everybody knew where we were in the process of responding to this crisis.
Commissioner Ellinger, I guess since the crisis is now past, have you gone to the federal government and asked for any sort of after-the-fact permission for having shifted the money around as has been done?
And Mr. Chair, the crisis is not over. We continue to monitor 50 or so people per day who are still coming back. There are still Ebola cases occurring in West Africa. The crisis is not there. It is going to be ongoing. So we continue to have those needs. We are certainly having conversations with the federal government. There's some possibility of some funding coming available in April. We will be applying for those dollars as best we can. Certainly when we, at the end of March, when we have a conversation with our federal partners on all the various grants about whether or not we can meet the requirements of those grants, that Ebola certainly will be part of those conversations. But this is an ongoing issue that we will continue to work with probably for another 2 years.
Representative Hamilton.
excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, is Minnesota, will we be subject to any additional penalties, fines? Will this put any future grants in jeopardy, or do you think the federal government will be understanding due to the circumstances?
Commissioner Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton. Over 60% of the state health department budget comes from federal grants, and in our infectious disease area, it's actually over 90% of our dollars come from the federal government. So not fulfilling the requirements of these grant applications, many of which are competitive grants, is of concern to me. Our relationship with CDC is very important. So if we are not able to meet the requirements of that grant, the grants, I think it will have implications down the road for whether our competitiveness for that. That's why we would really like to be able to meet the requirements of those grants. I think they would be understanding if they would recognize that for a short period of time we had to shift resources in order to meet this crisis, but that we then backfill later on to fulfill the requirements of the grant. That is my hope.
Representative Hamilton.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I don't know if you can answer this question, but would it have put you in a better position if we would have came back in a special session, perhaps, in order to pass the proper language or funding in order for you to do this? Would that have made your life a little bit easier?
Commissioner Ellinger.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton. My focus was on protecting the health and safety of Minnesota citizens, so we mobilized the resources that we thought were necessary to do that. I would leave it up to the governor's office and the legislature to decide whether or not a special session was necessary. Certainly, I think we responded well. I think we responded effectively. I think our partners helped respond very, very effectively. I think we're in a good spot, but that's why the deficiency request now is here.
All right. Seeing no further questions, I'm sorry, Representative Sir Anderson. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. So I just want to make sure that I've got this correctly. So you needed $800,000 to fill this hole. You didn't get it from the governor. Instead, what we're looking at, the governor spending $800,000 for pay increases for his commissioners. I just want to make sure I've got that right, because it's the same amount of money that we're talking about here, $800,000 for your emergency and the governor is now spending it on commissioner pay raises. And I don't expect you to answer that, Commissioner, but I think it's a high point that we need to be aware of as we're having this discussion today.
Commissioner, do you want to make any response to that?
No, I don't need to respond.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Ellinger, I hear conversations about the import of the relationship that you have with these grant programs, and particularly with the CDC. But then in another conversation that you've had with one of the members, it says that you've mentioned that the end of March seems to be the magical time when you're going to have the communication with these various grant programs to let them know. I'm just wondering if we're under state statute that speaks to the issue of use of funds, why wouldn't communication have been with these grant programs more imperative at the time that you were looking at redirecting the funds to the Ebola crisis?
Commissioner Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, certainly some of the programs had communication with their grant offices, and I think CDC was aware of the fact that many states were using grant dollars to do this kind of thing, and they have been having conversations at a national level. We've been talking with CDC about how to make these move forward with funding for Ebola preparedness and response. Those are ongoing conversations, but what we have is the March sort of time period where we reconcile what we can do and what we can't do with the grants. That's built into those grant cycles.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, we've gone over this before, but I think it's important to clarify with the reference to the $800,000. You know, initially when I first heard about this, that was kind of my initial reaction as well. But as I had conversations with others and the conversations that have taken place here, it's really not $800,000 that was used. As the commissioner has pointed out, it was the use of experts in the various fields within the department that were needed. And what we're really doing is reimbursing for the time. We purchased that. We're purchasing that expertise, if you will. And it sounds like, and another thing I just learned today then, was that this has to be resolved then by the end of March when you do your final reports to the federal government and perhaps others that have given grants for the department. But we're really reimbursing for time. It wasn't dollars per se that were moved over. So really it has no relevancy other than the dollars that are before us to reimburse for the time relative to the department's budget that was in place before. I think that's important to understand, and if the commissioner wants to correct me, that's fine, but that's the gist of what I get from the discussion.
Well, Commissioner, I guess was this all time, or was it in some cases supplies or other monies from federal grants too?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson, the total dollars that we've spent so far is about $2.3 million. We've gotten some federal dollars from our Public Health Emergency Preparedness Grant that we've been able to use. We did get $120,000 that we've shared with our local partners on some of that. So we're really asking only for that stuff, the amount that we were unable to fund. And most of it, I don't have the exact detail, but most of this was staff time in response to. Certainly there were some supplies activities that were needed with that, but most of this was personnel costs.
Representative Carlson, do you have another question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that just confirms what the point I was trying to make. Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Ellinger, though, regardless of how you want to paraphrase the vernacular, time is money. And so I guess my point is, in order to pay for these additional requests or demands upon the epidemiologists or what have you, the money had to come from someplace, some account. And so whether it came from an account that was dedicated to one of these grant programs or not, that money has to be replaced because you paid it out to those folks in the form of salary. Is that correct?
Commissioner Ellinger.
Representative Albright, that is correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
So then the point to Representative Carlson is it's not that we're borrowing time. We legitimately paid these folks for time expended on behalf of an Ebola crisis project that would have ordinarily gone towards a grant program dedicated to another proposition. Is that correct?
Commissioner Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then the point then is that we're having to replenish those accounts with money from the state in order to complete or get as near to completion on those grant programs as possible. But the point is that the federal government provided us with the money to complete those anyway. And so the question is, it's money that we don't have that we have to replace by the state in order to fulfill the obligations under those grant programs. That would be correct.
Commissioner Ellinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright. We took people away from their usual activities to work on Ebola. Some of their work was not being done. So that the resources that we are asking for this deficiency funding will go to either fulfill the requirement of the grant by doing the work, or if we can't do that, repaying the federal government for what they paid us to do that we were not able to accomplish. The hope is that we can give these resources to actually do the work, because the work that was put off was important public health work in a whole variety of areas. So what our plans are is to do the work that is required by the grant with the dollars that we have from this deficiency request.
Okay. Members, I want to get on to the bill we've got before us today. I guess, Commissioner Ellinger, I do want to thank you for the work that you and your department did on this. I'm sure you put in many long nights, and I'm sure that everyone around this table appreciates the work you did. I guess I don't know what sort of communications you had with legislators about this. I wasn't here at the time of the crisis, but I guess if I was here and I had you call me, I think probably have suggested that maybe a better way to do it would have been to take some of the other money that was allocated to your budget and pay these individuals if, in fact, there weren't other individuals that could be hired. And I appreciate you wanting to do the best response you could, and hiring new people, unless you knew them somehow, you might have questions about whether they could really do the job. But I guess we also need to look at the requirements that the grants have, and I guess I still wonder a little bit about the language that's in some of these grants. But I guess just my suggestion would be, if there is another time, and I hope there isn't, that you look at using some of the other department money you have to pay for these people rather than just using the federal grants. But I do thank you for the work that you've done, and you have, I think, in everyone's estimation, did a good job on this emergency, and you were right. The emergency does continue, although not in as critical a sense, it seems, as it has been. Thank you, Commissioner Ellinger.
You're welcome.
And with that, I'm going to turn things over to Representative Albright and take the stand. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that House File 264 be referred to the General Register. And members, this is one half of the deficiency bill that left us a few weeks back. It was sent over to Representative Dean's committee, Health and Human Services Finance, and I think at that point it was changed so that they were just working off of Health and Human Services issues. And so in House File 264, we have just the language for the Department of Human Services deficiency appropriation, the money for the state hospital, the money for the Minnesota Food Assistance Program, and the two appropriations related to Ebola. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to move so that we get the full deficiency bill back before us in the form that it left us, the A6 amendment, which would have funding for the Department of Natural Resources, the full appropriation that we originally had in House File 264, as well as an appropriation of $1,350,000 for the Minnesota Zoo, which I understand after having been heard in Representative McNamara's committee was the amount they recommended. You know, I'm sorry, Representative McNamara, I think maybe I had talked about you making that amendment. But okay. Well, anyway, I'd like to move the A6 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Knobloch moves the amendment. The A6, Representative Knobloch, to your amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, just again, this is the full Department of Natural Resources funding to put it back into House File 264 as it was when it left this committee a few weeks ago, as well as the $1,350,000 deficiency appropriation for the zoo. And I'd appreciate your support, members of the committee.
Members, in your packet, there's also House File number 358. It was provided subsequent to the packets themselves being prepared, but that is the language that's contained in the A6 amendment.
And, yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, that is a different bill that had gone to the Environment Finance Committee where it was considered, and they referred it here, and I guess it's my intention to not take up that bill and then just move 264 with all the deficiency language in one bill.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, being that the other day I was the one that moved the amendment dealing with the zoo, Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, there is an adjustment that you're making in the zoo appropriation. Could you share with the committee what the standing of the Minnesota Zoo is on what's before us?
Representative Knobloch.
Well, I think I couldn't give you my opinion on that, but I see that Representative McNamara, who heard this in his committee and I think had the motion to reduce it to the $1,350,000, has his hand up. He can maybe speak further. My understanding is that the zoo can get by with the $1,350,000 and don't need the $1.5
million. Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, if I may, I just wanted to make that clear for the record then, and if Representative McNamara wants to speak to that, that's fine, but it is a 10% reduction, and what I'm hearing from you, Representative Knobloch, is that the zoo can live with that number then?
That's my understanding, Knobloch. Representative Carlson.
Representative McNamara, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson, Representative Knobloch. When we had the bill before our committee, the discussion was this is a number that their deficiency was weather-related, and this number pretty well associates with the impact of the weather, and it was with more up-to-date information from the original 1.5. And the zoo is hopeful that if things go okay the rest of the way through the biennium, that things will work out fine for them. So it seemed to be the prudent number to work with.
Representative Kahn.
Thank you.
I just wanted to point out, I'm sending it to just Representative Knobloch, but he can send it to everyone else, that Representative Erdahl is now an expert on the Como Zoo, and I'm sending a picture of him feeding the giraffe at the Como Zoo.
Well, Representative Kahn, Mr. Chairman, when you talk about sending, I was afraid you were going to send this bill off to Representative Erdahl's committee, and I was just going to say, I think we've sent it enough places now.
No, just sending it to you. You can decide what to do with it. Just the picture.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say maybe we probably better not get too heavily into the discussion about feeding the animals after the other night.
Representative Graskowski.
What happened to the other?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, so we have the amendment before us to add on to this bill, and I struggle with the word deficiency, and I heard Commissioner Ellinger talk about the Ebola Ebola activities, and you know, I guess if there's one piece of all of this that seems to be something that could be properly categorized as deficiency, that would be it, something that might not be planned for. or that couldn't be planned for. But, Mr. Chair, I struggle with this entire bill before us as we look at what should be the job of our governor and his cabinet in managing this state government. We are going to, through the passage of this bill, tell the taxpayers of Minnesota that we are going to pay for more government that wasn't even planned. And so I struggle with that. But before I get into more of that discussion, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, is there anyone from the DNR here? I wasn't in Representative McNamara's committee, and that's one area that I, as I look at some of this mismanagement that we are going to endorse here today with this, that's one area that I'm familiar with. And so I'm wondering if we can talk to the DNR about their particular category.
Is there anyone from the DNR here that would like to speak to that question from the representative? Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Robin Smith, Assistant Director, DNR Enforcement.
Good morning, and you could respond to Representative Drazkowski's question.
If I could qualify my question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Smith, thank you for being here. I would have thought or hoped we would have seen the commissioner here today, because I don't know if Mr. Smith is in a position to answer these questions, but potentially he is. I look at, and maybe you can share with us more of the details about this, but obviously the department is telling us that they need $568,000 of additional money from the taxpayers of Minnesota because they are projected to overspend the amount of money that the last legislature allocated or appropriated for them. Now, I don't have to remind members, but I will, a 15% increase, the largest increase in spending in the history of the state of Minnesota, and the government spent more than that. So, Mr. Smith, I'm curious. I was part of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee in 2011 and 12, and I remember very clearly the discussion, and I'm just going to look at one area here, the Game and Fish Fund. $371,000 of additional taxpayer money apparently needed there. The fees were raised on our hunting and fishing licenses to take care of the needs and the projected needs of providing for conservation enforcement throughout our state. And I am wondering why the leader of the DNR and the leader of our state government did not see that this was enough to do what they told us it was going to be enough to do.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I can speak to my perspective and give a little historical snapshot of how we came to this and what we've done to try remedy this, because asking for a deficiency was our absolute last resort. We started out this fiscal year with a $1.8 million deficit in the enforcement budget, and we've done a number of measures to reduce that down to 1.3, and this is the last piece that we need to make sure that we end in the black at the end of this fiscal year. The Division of Enforcement is a little different than a lot of the divisions in the Department of Natural Resources because we are solely a service provider. Our budget is compensation, fleet expenses, and training. And so when we had a number of increases in our operating costs, everything from the increase, the pattern bargaining with all the new contracts with all the state employees, the DNR enforcement officers got the same pattern increase as everybody else. There was a package to stabilize the retirement system in the Minnesota State Patrol retirement plan. A number of those, there's a number of different pieces to that. Employees had to pay more in. The retirees had some restrictions on what they get. There was some time for vesting people into the pension plan, and then one of those pieces was that the state paid more into that retirement for the state paid portion as well. We had increases in our fleet costs with the trucks and whatnot. So when we look at how we could achieve that gap, since we don't build bridges, we don't maintain trails, we don't purchase land in the Division of Enforcement, we had a very small area with where we could operate to get to close that deficit. And we've done a number of things to do that, and this is the last little piece that we need in order to get through the end of the year in the black.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Smith. I still don't understand, members, and Mr. Smith, maybe you can help us out, but this wasn't projected in last biennium's budget. There wasn't any discussion about this. Where are the priorities in the management of these different areas? I still don't understand why we're underwater in these areas. In 2011 and 12, the ship was going to sink and we were going to run out of money. So we went to the people of Minnesota and said, we're going to charge you more for your hunting and fishing licenses. And that was supposed to take care of the problem. We had another budget round in the last 2 years that should have set the priorities in the department. And apparently that didn't do the trick either. We're seeing that we're projected to spend more in each of these three areas than was planned last time. I just don't understand.
Mr. Smith, any remark? Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would want to remind members that if you notice on the amendment, line 1.8, $69,000 is from the general fund. That's about $12,000 of this appropriate, or 12%, excuse me, of this appropriation. That's for things when the COs do things like maybe have to go to a fire or an emergency that wouldn't come out of the dedicated funds. The dedicated funds, Representative Drazkowski was referring to line 1.9, is a bigger chunk, the Natural Resources Fund. And then the biggest pot of money is coming from the Game and Fish Fund. So it is those dedicated funds. The conservation officers are responsible to allocate their time to the different areas that they work in. So most of this money is coming from those dedicated funds. And the reality is the department worked real hard on this issue, and this is what started as 1.8 now has, if I'm not mistaken, Director Smith, there's 24 open conservation officers, frontline conservation officers, positions not funded currently. And this money will allow those conservation officers that are left to work overtime this Memorial Day and this Fishing Day weekend, fishing opener weekend, to protect us for AIS and for people that maybe are doing the wrong thing or are ill-informed. So I think, members, this is the right thing to do, and I would appreciate your support. And if I may add,
Representative McNamara,
the commissioner of DNR is not at this meeting because he's at a meeting in Park Rapids dealing with another issue that we're very glad he's there today.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would just like, maybe Representative McNamara can help out here, but I would just like clarification. These dollars, are there parts of government that are being reduced in their spending in equal amounts to these dollar amounts as we reprioritize them for the categories that they are intended for? Because it seems to me that we're spending brand new monies because the agency heads fail to plan properly.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, I think the contracts, as Director Smith alluded to, had additional costs for the department. And those contracts, if I remember correctly, were part, the conservation officers are lumped with the correction officers. And that contract, the amount of that was not ascertained to where it could have properly been dealt with last year. So where those amounts were significantly larger than this amount of 568, by holding positions open, they were able to reduce the costs down to this, what I would say is a manageable level. And Representative Drazkowski, they can get by without this money.
If we eliminate this part of it, there will be basically almost no overtime available for any of the conservation officers between now and June 30th. And I don't think that's in the best interest of the state of Minnesota. I don't like to see government grow at all, and I was very nervous of what this was about, but I think they're being prudent. I think they're doing their best in the situation, and I think it's the right thing to do.
Any further discussion? Representative Knobloch moves Amendment A6. Hearing no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Amendment is adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, we've got a couple of other amendments. The A10 amendment, I guess, I don't recall now if that was an amendment that Representative Dean wanted to offer. I know there's another amendment he wanted to offer, too. Otherwise, I can offer it.
Representative Dean?
Sure, I can speak to the A10 amendment. What the A10 amendment does is it divides the dollars between the four hospitals that spoke up and volunteered to take the Ebola challenge on, and they are Unity Children's Mayo and the University of Minnesota. And it allocates those dollar amounts between the four hospitals, and the four hospitals are in agreement with that, and they support that.
Are you, Representative Dean, are you moving that amendment then?
I would move the amendment.
Representative Dean moves the amendment labeled A10. Any discussion to the amendment?
Mr. Chair, let me also say, you know, when I first saw this $2 million request, I thought this was really unusual that we would have something that wasn't going to state government in an efficiency bill. I think it's the only time I've ever seen something like this. But these hospitals and medical providers really did step forward at this time, and I think that they stepped forward with some risk to themselves. If you recall what happened to the hospital in Dallas that treated the first Ebola patient, there were some problems down there. I understand that that hospital had some serious financial reversals because of that, and I think that I want to recognize and support these medical providers for stepping forward during this time of the state's need to provide these services. And so I would urge people to vote for the amendment.
Members, any discussion to the amendment? Hearing none, Representative Dean renews his motion to amend. Under A10, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion, the amendment is adopted. Representative Dean, do you also have the A11?
I have the A11 amendment and would like to move the A11 amendment.
Representative Dean moves the A11 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members, I consider this a friendly amendment that just specifies that the additional amounts being appropriated to the Department of Human Services must only be spent on increased staffing levels, renovations, and improvements at the security hospital.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, is there anybody here from the security hospital today? I don't need him to come down. I would just like to make a comment to hijack about 30 seconds of your time in the committee. Each time a bill comes up for the security hospital, I bring up a situation where their members are being assaulted there at the facility. And recently I had some communication with a staff person at the security hospital, and I've been pressing them for an emergency response team to take care of these critical incidents like we have in the sex offender program. They don't have one in the mentally ill and dangerous, and they're going hand-to-hand combat with these mentally ill and dangerous, emphasis, clients. And I've been trying to talk them into an emergency response team, and I got a communication back that the situation was taken up about a year or two ago. A survey was sent out to the staff, and they decided that a critical some type of other team would be used where they have available people on shift, no matter if they're 95 pounds or 200 and some pounds, take care of incidents unarmed, and that they chose that system. I haven't been able to find any of the staff that have received that survey or been asked to choose that system. And that system was chosen to cover staffing needs, and so far it hasn't been used to address those, and they keep pulling half-trained volunteers out every day to fight with these patients. So I just want to increase the emphasis again that the assaults are taking place on staff at a high rate, and they're not doing anything to address it, it seems like. So thank you for the time.
Representative Heckbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to ask either the author of the amendment or the commissioner. I'm a little bit concerned about this because there's also issues at some other facilities, such as Anoka, for example, where they need additional personnel there. There's no security cameras in the hallways. I understand there's a number of assaults taking place there, one pretty close to my family, and so there's some definite issues that need to be addressed at the Anoka Treatment Center. And this, my question was going to be, before I seen this amendment, can any of this money be used at the Anoka Treatment Facility? And but now I see with this amendment that that's going to be impossible. So are we going to address this same issue like Representative Cornish was talking about, these assaults that are taking place at these hospital facilities, where these dangerous criminals are, and there's not enough security there? Are we going to be doing something about this in the upcoming session? Is this issue going to be addressed? Apparently no money's going to go to the Anoka facility to address some of those problems. What's happening? Because I'm very concerned about this.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hackbarth, since the last time we had this brought up in committee, several people who work at the security hospital have reached out with some pretty serious concerns about the management, about the use of overtime, about training, and about their own safety. And they're very concerned that the deficiency request is not getting at the root problem either at that facility or other facilities. And I think you bring up an excellent point about the need for more oversight and reform at all of these facilities. But we do have a great deal of concern about the employees that have been added with this facility. Unfortunately, a client at this facility was beaten to death by another client, resulting in several deficiencies that were noted that they have to react to. We're very concerned that the 58 additional employees with other spending at that facility is not going to address the problem. That is something that we are very, very concerned about and we'll be bringing up in the upcoming weeks in the committee, and would like to work with you and with others at the other facilities as well to address specific or generic problems or systemic problems in the system.
I'm wondering if the Deputy Commissioner for DHS wants to make any kind of response.
Yes, this is for the conditional license.
Welcome to committee. If you could just
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Ann Berry. I'm the Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Human Services. This specific request, we have no concerns about the amendment. This is exactly how we were going to spend the money on staffing, renovation, and security improvements. So we don't have any concern about the A11 amendment. As far as Anoka is concerned, there are many of the enhancements that we made at the security hospital that we should be considering at our other facilities, Anoka, and some of our CBAHs. And we will look forward to having that conversation for the next biennium, for 16 and 17. We don't have the resources to do that yet in this biennium, except at Security Hospital if this deficiency is approved.
Representative Hackbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, I just want you to know that I really don't think that's an appropriate response, because we have an issue there right now. Something has to be done at that Anoka facility, because it's a dangerous situation. People are being attacked there. Employees are being attacked by patients there. And something needs to be addressed. They need to have either some kind of security system where they can watch the hallways with security cameras, or they need some other
security officers on duty to monitor the hallways at this facility. This is a dangerous situation, and something needs to change there with the management, or we have to get something done there to avoid people being attacked at that Anoka facility. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Berry pretty much answered my question. I really wanted to see how the department responded, because I'm a little bit actually confused about this amendment, and maybe this is more appropriately directed to Mr. Marks or something like that, but as I'm understanding, a deficiency is money that's already spent or obligated, and so when you put on something like this, this amendment seems to address money going forward, and that would be kind of my question, but I mean, the department's fine with it, so I'm fine with it, but it's just kind of more a general question about whether that's appropriate to this bill, I guess.
Mr. Marks, would you like to respond to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I think the language is flexible enough that it's increased staffing levels, renovations, and improvements relative to some past point in time, and I think they have documented when, you know, the increases they've done under various requirements, so I think the language works.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Dean.
Commissioner Berry, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Commissioner Berry, I just thought since you were up there already, I would save you a trip back. One of the things that we're looking at within the deficiency request is the 58 additional employees and how they are going to be deployed. One of the questions I had is a staff member contacted me and said that there was a lot of turnover at this facility and there's a lot of vacancies that are currently in place. And I'm wondering whether or not the 58 includes those slots that are currently unfilled, or whether this is 58.55 new positions at the facility.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dean, these are added positions, the cost of adding the positions. We do have a number of vacancies right now, so we are running a lot of overtime at our facility. That's not our preference. But people, these were all new positions and the costs associated with those new positions. The 58 and the 15 with the second condition on the license, if you turn, there were two points in time where we added staff. The first was the first condition on the license. We added 58 staff, and those were all new staff. And then we added another 15 staff with the second condition on our license. And those were staff so that we could provide training, coaching, mentorship on the units. There are a lot more staff on the units today than there were 3 years ago.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Berry, and could you tell us of the requests that you have for this facility? First of all, how many clients are at this facility? Secondly, how much of the request of $10 million is going to be going to overtime for that facility? Because that was another thing I had heard anecdotally from emails from folks that are working there, that there's an incredibly large amount of overtime expenses at the facility.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dean, I believe today our census is right around 380, 85, somewhere in there. I'd have to check to look at our census number, but about 385 clients at our facility in St. Peter. And the question about overtime is the way the contracts are set up for every position that where we use overtime, it's either time and a half or in some cases on holiday double time. So you can imagine how quickly that adds up. If we run 24/7 operation, if we need so many people on the unit at a time, say in one of our units we probably have 5 security counselors on the unit at a time. If we're running overtime, that means our costs look more like we're running 7 people on the unit at the time. So we don't, it's not the position we want to be in. We want to be able to review and add all these positions as quickly as we can. It gets complicated, and I don't want to overcomplicate the answer to the question. So I'm just going to the cost for overtime basically make it more expensive for us to run this facility. So we want to reduce the amount of overtime we're running at the facility, but it still is associated with those 58 positions that we added.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. The way that I've just kind of scratched it out, it looks to me like it's about $3 million in overtime. But I'd have to check that or get verified, and if I could get some information back on that, that would be great. I would appreciate that. Secondarily, about a week ago, we found out that the Department of Human Services, we received notification, was going to be laying off more folks about the same time the deficiency was moving into the committees. Just wondering if that was anticipated, the layoffs at DHS were anticipated, and if this deficiency request is going to be moving through, would in fact some of those deficiencies, or would those layoffs not occur, or will the people that receive their pink slips, will they get good news if this passes, or, and if not, why wasn't that figured out?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, the 35 positions that were laid off about 2 weeks ago, none of them were at the security hospital. We protected the security hospital. We also protected unit staff. The reductions that we made were in high-level administrative and managerial positions for this biennium and the next biennium. They have the greatest impact on the next biennium. We wanted to protect unit staff, floor staff, and security hospital, so none of those reductions were to positions at the security hospital. As you know from my testimony in your committee, that we are running, the $10.4 million is only part of the deficiency that we are running this year. We added almost 60 staff at Anoka to get at the issues that have been raised here today around safety. We have contracts with local law enforcement at Anoka. We've added costs to our programs that we are going to manage between now and the end of the year. The 35 positions helped us to manage some of those deficiencies that we're facing in other parts of our system.
Any further discussion, members?
Well,
Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you. I just want to make it clear to the committee that even though we just heard that staff has been increased, I don't know what's going on up there at Anoka, but something's not right when people are still being attacked. This was just last week that this happened, that one of the employees was attacked there. And so something is wrong. Something's not right at that facility. I mean, if somebody's, if they're not patrolling the hallways or what the issue is, I don't know what's going on, but something's not right if they have all those extra employees spending all that extra money and people are still being attacked. That's all I wanted to say.
Members, any further discussion? Representative Dean moves to amend 264, House File 264 with the A11. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members, we have the A13 amendment. Representative Vaskowski, are you offering that amendment?
I am, Mr. Chair. I move the A13 amendment.
To your amendment.
Mr. Chair, the A13 amendment provides for budget reductions to the fiscal 2015 departmental budgets for health, human services, and natural resources, $16,000 reduction for the Department of Health, $6,000 for the Department of Human Services in reduction, and $18,000 less in the 2015 budget for the Department of Natural Resources. As you see, Mr. Chair and members, on the amendment also directs the Commissioner of MMB to allocate each reduction to the agency appropriations, the area that supports the Commissioner's salary. Mr. Chair, if I could, we have seen just in the last week that the Governor has decided to increase salaries in an astronomical amount to each of the Commissioners in the state of Minnesota's government. Averages, I'm told, are about a 30% increase. I'm looking at a table here. Many of them were at $111,000 or $113,000. They're increased to $144,000. One particularly stands out. The Met Council chair was increased from $61,000 to $144,000, an $83,000 increase in that salary, 136% increase. We are seeing a bill, Mr. Chair, before us that, in my opinion, is mostly comprised of elements that are the result of mismanagement by our commissioners. And what I would like to do with this amendment is to allow the people of Minnesota to send a signal to these commissioners, particularly because they're in the bill and they're salient to the bill, that when we pay you very good money, we expect you to manage your agencies so that we aren't coming forward with these types of additional requests. That's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I support the amendment, and from my standpoint, whatever a person thinks of the governor's salary increases, this is the deficiency bill. Agencies are here saying, legislature, we just can't make it to June 30th unless you give us this extra money. No one had informed us of these additional raises until we found out about it last Thursday. And I guess I think that we should have been informed if some of the money that we are appropriating to these departments is, in fact, in a sort of backhanded way going to salary increases. And so what everyone thinks of the salary increases and whether they're justified or not, I think that we should have known that some amount of the monies that we were being asked to appropriate was actually going to salary increases, and so I support this amendment.
Representative Kahn.
I understand that all of these numbers were contained in the recommendation that came from the Commission on Employee Relations that has been around for quite some time, so I'm not sure why it was such a surprise. Is that true, Mr. Chairman? I guess I'm asking that.
I am.
Were these...
Representative Kahn, I'm not familiar with the provisions in that.
Representative, well, maybe why don't we have staff answer that?
Yep. Mr. Chair, as a follow-up, I was going to ask if we could perhaps get a little history of this from MMB, being that they're the ones that are directed in the point that Representative Kahn was making about where the recommendations came from.
If the commissioner for MMB could approach the assistant fire table, I think we have some questions. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name. We all know you very well.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members Myron Frantz, Commissioner of the Minnesota Management and Budget.
Commissioner Frantz, to the question that Representative Carlson posed.
I think what would be the best history that I can provide and context that I can provide for the committee is to talk a little bit about the Compensation Council that was formed in 2013 and made recommendations to the legislature, which were adopted in 2013, which formed the basis of this new law. I think the critical thing that I just want to provide a little bit of history in terms of how the Compensation Council came to deal with this issue. For those of you who have been around for many years, you'll know that the last increase, a little bit of history here, back in July of 1989, what did I say?
Long history.
I'm not that old, but in July of 1989, the agency heads received salaries that were about $67,000 or around $78,000. So with few exceptions, those agency head salaries remained the same for an eight-year period, from 1989 to July of 1997. Now, in July of 1997, Governor Carlson recommended increases that ranged from 24% to 70%, with the average increase of about 44%. Those recommendations were enacted. Now, the agency head salaries were again raised by Governor Ventura in January of 2000 by 5% and another 6% in August of 2000. Once again, these increases were proposed by Governor Ventura and approved by the legislature. Now, those agency head salaries remained unchanged for 12 years, from August of 2000 to January of 2013. So this takes us to the point where the Compensation Council was deliberating these issues. So in February, March of 2013, the Compensation Council, which was made up of 16 people appointed by the governor, legislative leadership, and the Supreme Court, met a number of times during that spring. They formed recommendations that they presented to the legislature on March 11th, 2013. I think that letter and those recommendations were attached to the letter you all received from the governor this morning. Now, those recommendations were concerned about the salary limits of agency heads had been limited to 85 or 95% of the governor's salary. So one of the issues was for the Compensation Council was to not make a recommendation about the governor's salary, because we know that's a little bit different of an issue in terms of what the governor's salary should or shouldn't be. I think we can all have a difference of opinion about that. Actually, as we talk more about compensation, I know we all have differences of opinion about compensation levels. But that those recommendations were made to change that from 120% of the governor's salary to 133%. Two different classes of agency heads were listed in the statute. And that would take the full, the total range of the one category of employees or agency heads up to about 160,000 in 2013.
Yes.
Now, these new state salary limits can be adjusted annually for inflation, the same as that is done for local government employees. Now, the governor, as part of these recommendations, the governor would have the authority to set the salary of an agency head within these these new statutory limits. Now, the statutory language making the actual salary of an agency head the limit on the salaries of most other employees was also recommended to be changed, because what was happening, as you can imagine, there was a lot of salary compression that assistant commissioners, deputy commissioners, and commissioners were starting to all get paid about the same, because the agency heads' salaries were statutorily prohibited from changing. And the recommendation of that Compensation Council was that MMB should consult with a private consultant to help with determining what would be the correct way to assess and determine the relative values of these different agency head salaries. Well, the legislature adopted the Compensation Council's recommendation in 2013. Now, Governor Dayton used that authority that was granted during the 2013 session, and he raised the commissioner's salaries by 5% in January of 2013, and he also raised them by 5% in January of 2014. He waited to make any further changes to the compensation of salary heads based upon the compensation study that was ordered by the legislature. This is what we call a Hayes study, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But the Hayes study was conducted following the 2013 law, and the consultants were used to try to compare our agency heads with one another, with other states, with local governments, and with the private sector. So the Hay ratings that were finally concluded grouped these different salaries for the commissioners in different categories. The governor then used his authority under the 2013 law and made his salary decisions in January of 2015. Those two limits that we now have are $164,000 for one category of commissioners and $148,000 for the other category. Now, these compare to local government salary limits of $165,000. So the governor made those recommendations, and on February the 4th, I, as commissioner of MMB, sent a letter to the Legislative Coordinating Commission explaining these changes and giving a schedule of those changes, which I assume you all have at this point. One of the elements that the Compensation Council looked to back in 2013 was the comparison of state agency head compensation or salaries with local government officials. One of the things they found was that the average salary for the Hennepin, Dakota, and Anoka County administrators, if you add them together and average them, the average salary is about $169,000. If you take 60 city administrators around the state who make over $100,000 and average all those together, the average is about $129,000. If you take the top 10 city coordinators and average those, just the top 10, that's about $155,000 salary. Now, if you take the top five, they make $155,000 or more. So that was one concern that the Compensation Council had at the time. The other one was comparing Minnesota to the other states. And even with the new changes that we have that the governor has made, we still see that in many ways some other states pay more than the current commissioners with the new changes. We also know that the private sector comparison is a tough one, and that we're certainly not intending to equal or match the private sector. That's not what the intent of the Compensation Council recommendations were, and that's not the intent of the governor's recommendations as you've read in his letter. But his recommendation was to respond to the 12-year stagnation of salaries for commissioners, to respond to the unequal or non-comparable salaries with local governments and with the private sector, and to make a recommendation that he believed would attract the right kind of talent to run state government. And that's the context I'd like to at least begin our discussion with, and happy to take further questions, Mr. Chair.
I have Gunther, Cornish, Anderson, and then McNamara. So, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you answered my question with your Hays study comment. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Commissioner? Sir. Cornish? Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair and members, I support the amendment. Nothing in the whole testimony that you just heard can make this raise right. I'll tell you a quick story followed by a question. The State Patrol, the Conservation Office, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Agents, and the Gambling Enforcement and the Fugitive Apprehension Task Force are part of the MLEA, the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association. A few years ago, they went to contract bargaining. The state said no and didn't give them anything. Then they went with one of these Hay studies. There's a lot of different methods for these studies. Hay studies, comparative worth studies, and the Stanton 5 study. All of those cops compared themselves with a bunch of associations outside them. They're getting paid more, and went with that argument this year. Were again turned down by the state, requesting over a little over $3 and $3 million. Spent thousands of dollars of money in their argument, and the state said no to them. And so the arbitrator ruled. Before the arbitrator ruled and said the state was out of money a few years ago, they could use that as a defense to not to pay them what they wanted. And this year, they said that the Stanton 5 thing, the comparative worth study, didn't apply, and so they gave them $3 and $3 million. So this is just like a slap in the face to peace officers around the state that are getting shot and killed and run over on the highways, for the state to turn them down in previous contracts, give them $3 and $3 million, and said that their comparative worth study wasn't good, and now for the Hays study here, that it works. And so you just can't make this right with any of these explanations. There isn't any right to it. You just don't increase somebody's salary in this huge percentage in one bite. I can see a $3 and $3 million. Why not? The state employees all bargained, pattern bargaining this year for $3 and $3 million. You may have asked me, Council 6, a lot of them, and then we give these commissioners this raise. It's just, I don't know how they can justify it, even look their employees in the face when they go out and talk to them. So, and the question I had is this: if you went out to my district and walked into the local VFW and said everything you just said, and then said you're going to give somebody a $60,000 raise in 1 year, what do you think they would say? And you probably can't answer that question because you don't know my district, but it's a farming, rural, conservative district. And so it just, you can't make this right with any explanation.
Commissioner Friends.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I grew up on a farm, and I know what it's like to grow up in a rural district. And I know that people in rural districts have different issues and different concerns about compensation. But I can tell you that I've traveled around the state not to talk about compensation, but to talk about taxes. And I've had that conversation with a number of different, 50 different cities, hundreds of different meetings, thousands of different people. And what I told those folks as I went out there was, here are the issues that I see that, as a revenue commissioner at the time, about our tax system and fairness, and what do they think the problems are. And they gave me their input back. They gave me their concerns. They gave me their ideas. But what I learned from that is, if you show those folks how hard you're working, how dedicated you are to making the state better for them, they'll understand and they'll appreciate that you're working for your money in an honest and fair way.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I want to review a little bit the numbers that you talked about So when you're looking at the starting salary from 2012 for commissioners, and I'm going to pull out the Commissioner of Human Services. So in 2012, her salary was at $108,393. In 2013, when the governor decided to give a 5% raise, hers was actually more significant than that. She went up to $143,821. And now with the governor's most recent pay raise for her in 2015, just 2.5 years later from that raise, she's at $154,992. So if you compare what the salary was in 2008 to now 2015 after the governor's given the most recent pay raise after two other ones in the two previous years, we're looking at a 43% increase in salary for that commissioner. As well as you, as the commissioner of MMB, you also received a 43% increase. If you look at Department of Commerce, for example, the commissioner there went from $108,393 in 2012 to now being $144,991. I don't think that there is a citizen in the state of Minnesota that expected that the surplus money would be going toward commissioner salaries. I think that they were at the most hoping for some tax relief and certainly hoping that we would be spending this on the priorities that they expect. And I'm guessing that none of them view this as a priority of the state. Commissioner, I'm really concerned about how this was handled. The governor, in the law that was written in the state government finance bill from 2013, gave him 30 days to notify the legislature. He made this change on January 5th of 2015, and the leaders in the House and the Senate were not notified of this change until February 4th, fully utilizing all 30 days to notify the legislature about this. Meanwhile, all of the committee chairs are sitting down and trying to figure out a budget proposal. He himself put together a budget, never once mentioning that this was part of the plan. And I think if we're going to be honest with the citizens when we are trying to manage the budgetary situation, we need to know what is all out there. What are all of the costs that we are going to be expected to pay for? And this was just a kind of whammy that came out of nowhere. And now each of these committee chairs are going to have to figure this out in their budget, because certainly the governor didn't include it in his. I don't see the line item in his budget where he says that this is going to be an expense for the state. There are a lot of questions that I have. Commissioner, I would like to have a copy of the Hayes study that you referenced. I would also like to know, Commissioner, how far does this extend? Did we have pay raises for the deputies and the assistant commissioners in the last 3 years? Could you answer that for me, please?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, let me first of all answer the Department of Human Service question you raised about that salary change. That salary was changed differently than some of the other commissioners, because at the time the Commissioner of Human Services had the added duty of being on the board of MNsure, and so there was an additional compensation that the governor felt that the Department of Human Services commissioner was entitled to. So that's why there's a little bit different scenario there. I think one of the keys that the governor tried to utilize in following the statutory procedure in which he was able to make these changes pursuant to the new statutory limits was after the Hayes study was concluded, after he had reached his conclusions, he made those decisions, and we communicated them to the legislature as required by the statute. To the extent we can do that in a more timely way or in a different way, we'd be happy to talk about that going forward. And there have been other changes in assistant commissioner and deputy commissioner salaries over the last few years, and we'd be happy to get that to you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just answer right off the top of your head, though, Commissioner, whether there were salary increases for the deputies and the assistant commissioners? Yes or no would suffice.
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay, and Ms. Excuse me.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, and I don't know if this is something you could answer or if fiscal staff can help me out. You had mentioned that the Commissioner of Human Services was given additional funding because of her role on MNSHR. Do you know, I thought that MNSHR provided per diem to the people that served on that board, and I don't know if that extended to the Commissioner, if that was just limited to the private folks. And perhaps we'll get the question later. But, Commissioner, maybe you can help on that if you know the answer to that.
Commissioner Frantz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as Commissioner, Commissioner of DHS was not entitled to the compensation or the per diem, and so this was there was no additional monies paid through that process to the Commissioner, and that's why the Governor made this other adjustment, salary adjustment.
Great. Members, we are 13 minutes before the top of the hour, and I have McNamara, Dean, Liebling, and Davids left on for questions. So if we could be brief in our questions, and we can get to the vote on the amendment of this and the passage vote on the bill itself. So, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Drazkowski, for bringing this forward, because I really think it puts into perspective the priorities that we're moving forward with. We're talking about Ebola funding and trying to get additional dollars to fight something that we hadn't anticipated. At the same time, we're hearing about salary increases for the administration for political appointees. And I just want to clear up one thing, that this is not a decision that was made by a council somewhere off-site. This is made by the governor. The governor, in his letter this morning to legislators, reiterated that fact and said that that this indeed is his decision. And I would just question whether or not the need is there to keep these folks as commissioners or to get good commissioners. I think it's an honor to be asked by any governor to be on the governor's cabinet, and I think it always will be so. The governor points out in his letter that the legislature is, quote, woefully underpaid. Then as an arguing point for this, but the thing that I want to point out is that the governor says that this request is not at the request of any commissioner, none of whom have left for greener pastures that I know personally of, so I don't think that's an issue. And I just want to make clear what the governor said to us this morning. He said, I want to make clear that none of my commissioners have ever complained to me about their salaries. Not one has asked me for a raise. Not one. Not a single person has asked for one dime of this money. And here we are coming at the same time as the deficiency request. I think that that's something to keep in mind, and it's a good reason to support Representative Drazkowski's amendment.
My apologies, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Franz, I just want to make 2 points. One of them, Representative Anderson already made. I'm extremely disappointed to see the date of the letter from the governor of February 9th when it took effect January 5th. I realize we became aware of it on February 4th, just before the weekend. We need to try and work together, both sides of the aisle, and it's extremely disappointing to get the politics like this and to wait 30 days. Many of us were in the midst of real tough negotiations of understanding the deficiency bill. It would have been appropriate to let us know what was going on. And going forward, we have to change how we're doing it, or we're going to have a real challenge as we work towards May 18th. Commissioner, I would like you to get back to me. I'd like to know the high five impact on the pensions for these commissioners. If you could get back to Representative Knobloch, some of these commissioners will be able to spend the next 4 years now working for the state at a significant pay raise and be subjected to a substantially larger pension contribution. It's going to way exceed the $800,000 we're talking about. So if you could get back to the chairman on what the actual impact of that is, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just really like to comment or go back to the amendment itself, and not commenting on the wisdom or the way that the salary changes were made, but the comment was made when the amendment was introduced about mismanagement, that this was put forward as some kind of a punishment for mismanagement by some of these commissioners. And I just wanted to respond to that, because We just had Commissioner Ellinger in front of us from the Department of Health talking about the exemplary way in which his department responded to the Ebola crisis and kept Minnesotans safe. And he's got one of the biggest hits on this amendment would be to his department. And I think there's certainly no mismanagement there that anybody has pointed to, and I think he's been commended by many members of this committee. As to the Department of Human Services, we know that there are a lot of challenges in that agency, certainly when you've got a $35 billion budget to manage and 6,000-plus employees. There are going to be some issues. They have some of the biggest challenges to deal with anywhere in the state, like the sex offender program, the security hospital. Those are going to be challenges and have been challenges no matter who's in charge. But I certainly don't think there's any mismanagement there that we should enact this as some kind of a punishment. And I think that's very irresponsible to put it forward in that way. So whether members think the governor's decision was right or wrong or should have been done differently or not, that was his decision to make. But to the degree that this amendment is about punishing somebody for mismanagement, I just think that that's irresponsible and it should be rejected for that reason alone.
Representative Mr. Chair, if I could respond to that just quickly, since Representative Drazkowski isn't here. When I had worked with Representative Drazkowski on this, I guess people should notice, first of all, we aren't setting a new salary for any of the commissioners that are involved. Secondly, we're not dealing with any other commissioners outside of the departments that are involved in this bill. We're only looking at the amount of additional salary that went to these departments for these commissioners during the period from January 1st, 2015 through June 30th, 2015, when they would be getting these additional funds. And from my perspective, as I had said earlier, a deficiency bill is agencies coming to us saying, legislature, we need more money. We just can't make it to June 30th unless you give us this money. And now we suddenly find out that, well, actually, they maybe wouldn't have needed quite as much money if they didn't have these salary increases. And no one told us about the salary increases. I think that it's something that we should have been informed of. And from my standpoint, that's the reason that I support this amendment and would encourage members to also do so.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Commissioner Franz. I'm somewhat confused on your comments that the governor did this because he's having trouble recruiting talent. I happen to believe that our commissioner of MMB has tremendous talent. I happen to believe that our new commissioner of revenue has tremendous talent. And we got them, those two commissioners, for the old price. Have we had commissioners threatening to leave? I don't think your recruiting talent is a good argument, because if you left, which I hope you don't because you're very talented, but if you did leave, there'd be 150 people lined up, of course not quite as talented as you, but very talented that could do the job. They'd be lined up at the old price. Why do we want to pay a new price?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, thank you for your kind comments. I think part of the question is, and the reason that I didn't, I'll just speak for myself, didn't ask the governor for a raise or didn't think that was appropriate. He asked me 4 years ago to be revenue commissioner, and he asked me to serve the state of Minnesota. He told me what the salary was, and I made that decision knowing what it was and knowing that it may never change. And so I think that's the way that I approached it. Was I was honored to be asked, as many of you have mentioned. I was honored to be asked. I was honored to serve, and I still am. And I think the governor felt that this was, as he's mentioned in his letter to you, he wanted to make a statement that this is what he believes is important going forward. This isn't just for today. This is for the future as well. I mean, he's already indicated in the letter he doesn't intend to raise salaries again. He believes that this is one of those moments where you make changes. The history that I told you about showed that the period is 8 years or 12 years where these salaries just don't get changed because it's politically very difficult. So the governor made his decision, you know, whether you agree or not, Representative Davids, to make that change. And none of the commissioners that I'm aware of did ask for the raise, but I think we're honored to serve, and we're happy to provide you with all the information we can and the citizens of Minnesota with the best service we possibly can.
Representative.
And, Mr. Chairman, the commissioner of MMB kind of makes my point. So when someone for the administration says you're having trouble recruiting, I don't believe that for a second. I think the governor has a talented group of commissioners, and I think most of them are not in it for the money, but rather to serve the state of Minnesota. And they're at a point in their life where they can do it for that. So, you know, the timing here is just couldn't be worse. It really couldn't be worse. And so I hope you can downplay, as you're explaining to people, the trouble recruiting talent, because I don't believe that for a second. I think there's a lot of talent out there, and then they would do it for the old price to serve the state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree, Representative Davids. I'm glad that you pointed out the talent that's here. And Representative Liebling's point is very good, that one of the main rationales for this amendment given by the author was implications of competency and questioning competency and mentioning mismanagement of these budgets. And so I think that is my main concern with this amendment. We're taking three commissioners out of 25 that are affected by the salary increase, plus we have the PUC that's affected, so they're technically not commissioners serving at the pleasure of the governor. But, you know, we're choosing three who have done, I think, an admirable job, and just because they're linked to the deficiency bill, we're cutting their budgets. And so I think that's not a good rationale for this amendment. And, yeah, let's have a conversation, a broader conversation about compensation. Maybe that's in order, but certainly not in this amendment, and certainly not randomly taking three commissioners who have done a very admirable job. So for that reason, I'm going to oppose this amendment.
Representative Drazkowski for any final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. And I agree with Representative Davids. You are doing an excellent job. I also agree with the representative that, you know, the people of Minnesota would have liked your job at the old price just as well as at the new price. But I would ask, through those studies that the Compensation Council and others in the administration have done, I've got a letter from the governor from February 9th to legislative leadership, and he acknowledges in the letter that most of the people who pay for these salaries earn less than the top officials in government, and he does in the second paragraph of the letter. And it strikes me, and I remember reading very clearly, that since 2007 the median income of Minnesotans has decreased nearly $5,000. Were those numbers considered, the people who were paying the bill here for these luxurious gold-plated salaries that were announced last week, were the average or the median incomes of Minnesotans and where they've gone in the last 7 or 8 years, were those discussed?
Mr. Friends.
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly that's part of the analysis done in the Hayes study. One of the things that the Hayes study tries to do is to go through not only to fully articulate what is the job, what are the duties, how complicated, how broad a scope, how small a scope, how big a budget, how many people, but it also does try to compare to the private sector and to other compensation. So there is this attempt through that analysis to link not just the difficulty or the quality of the job, but to link it to other kinds of measures. So it does try to take that into account, and that's what the governor took into account when he made his decisions.
Any further discussion, members? Representative Drazkowski has moved to amend House File 264. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Knobloch.
Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion that House File 264, as amended, be referred to the General Register.
Members, Representative Knobloch. Representative Carlson, I'm sorry.
Yeah, before you take that motion, I just have a brief question. When this bill or elements within it were before us, before I was concerned about the timing and the ability to make the adjustments in the budget if the bill were passed too far ahead because of the ability to manage time. And when will this bill be up on the House floor, Representative Knobloch? Do you have any indication on that?
Representative Knobloch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I don't have a firm indication of that, although I do believe that when I was at the Council of Economic Advisors last week, or I guess you were there, maybe it was shortly after that, it was my understanding that as long as it's passed before February 20th, that it will be able to be incorporated into the February forecast, and I would expect at this point that it would be before then.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson. I want to say that it's important. The 20th isn't that far removed, but as I pointed out, I think it was when DNR was before us at the time that they said that they would have some more and more difficulty as we move further and further into the biennium making those adjustments that we do pass this with some dispatch. And other than that, Mr. Chairman, encourage people because of there may be some issues here that some of us are concerned about, but I think it's important that this bill move forward.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Knobloch moves House File 264 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Members, meeting is adjourned.